It's Wednesday, September 4th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 310 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 34 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
And this is Johan.
Since Johan is here, you guys can probably guess that I'm having a pretty decent night, so we're getting two recorded. That's why you've got something this week.
Oh, I thought you were just implying that anytime I'm here means that you're having a good night.
Oh, that's
right. No, no.
Well, I didn't say that wasn't true. I didn't say anything that excluded that.
That's within the realm of possibility in the Unicorn Kingdom.
If you want to follow me down Lollipop Lane to my Hasidic transgender...
I would read that comic. I totally would.
All right. So we want to talk about proactive players.
The good guys.
And what I mean by proactive players are people that create their own action, oftentimes in ways that is not necessarily directly related to the plot or was not done in concert with the group as a whole. So you walk into the tavern and one guy finds somebody else in there and just right hooks him and starts a bar brawl just because he can. The party's sitting around in analysis paralysis. And Chad says, screw it, grabs a clipboard and goes to work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's what I want to talk about. And I fully believe that these people are both a wonderful asset.
Yes, we are.
And can be a terrible curse, depending on what's going on.
I don't know if I agree with that.
But to set this up, Chad, you are using an allegory.
Yes.
From a different entertainment media.
Dan and I used to play World of Warcraft back in the day.
Yes.
When people did such things. Dan often played a healer. I play all kind of different stuff. I was playing the wizard, I guess. The mage. Flinging fireballs and whatnot. And the thing about World of Warcraft and a lot of MMOs, if you're not a video game player, is that you're in a dungeon, you're in a group with, say, five people. So there's Dan and I and three other people, and then there's all these monsters. As a group, as a team of real people, you go and you fight a bunch of monsters, and then you stop. You have to stop, you have to rest, because you have to get your hit points back, you have to get your magic points back, mana, whatever. And you have to do, like, you have to move stuff around your inventory, and then you have to do all the little administratia of the game. And most people do this every 2 feet. Then they have to talk about, well, I want to go down this hallway. Well, I'm trying to get this achievement. Well, I want to get this thing. This thing has a 0.0001% chance of dropping, and it takes 3.5 hours of side trip to get to it. So we're totally going down that way. And then there's this debate about it. And then I'm sitting here going, oh my God. And then Dan is, who is a very calm guy in these situations, just, you're sitting there in back because you're the healer and you're just waiting for everybody to continue on. And suddenly...
And it's important to note that in World of Warcraft, like many MMOs, and really, like, I guess a good tabletop dungeon crawl, there is an order to the party.
Mm-hmm.
You have the fighting classes or the tank or the melee classes, whatever, are up front. Sometimes there's kind of a middle line that's going to be your attack casters or your, like, ranged
fighters. That's what I was playing with.
Yeah, guys that have bows or guys that throw fireballs. Mm-hmm. And then usually all the way in the back is going to be the healer, for the simple reason that keeps the healer as far as possible from the fight. And the healer also needs that vantage point to see what's going on, to be aware of who's where and who needs healing and who's getting overwhelmed and all that kind of stuff. So it's important to note that as the healer, I am like Santa Claus. I see everything everybody does.
Yes. And so I would get bored out of my skull, and it's analysis paralysis. It's just like people are dicking around in their inventory, moving stuff that doesn't need to be moved. They're just playing with their slots and their spells. They're tweaking this. They're having debates and arguments about whether they should go left or whether they should go right or how to pull this guy. And then all of a sudden someone pulls the boss and everyone's like, who pulled the boss? The boss. Oh my God, it's in my hair. And then Dan is sitting back. He saw who pulled the boss. He knows, and he's healing the tank, and the tank is catching it, and he's taking care of the boss, and everyone's like, oh my God, we're going to die, we're going to die. And, you know, the DPS is rolling, I'm casting fireballs like I somehow knew it was going to happen, and, you know, I'm going crazy, and everybody's going crazy, and we beat the boss, and we go on. And this happens repeatedly throughout the course of the evening.
And in all the years we did this, how many times did I ever rat you out?
Not once.
Not freaking
a single
one.
Time.
Because while I'm much more passive about it, I was equally bored.
Yes.
And well, and you know, I will tell you right now, there was a trick to this. And this is a trick that, Chad, even you may not know, which is after a fight ends, okay, and I do whatever I need to do, get my mana back, I have done the legitimate work of prepping for the next fight.
Absolutely.
Nothing more, nothing less, okay? I've taken those few moments to prep for the next fight. Typically, the person I had targeted, which is who I'm going to heal, was not the tank. It was Chad. Because if Chad did not get off a polymorph or freeze or whatever he was going to do fast enough, then the person that was going to need the first big mega heal to survive was not the tank, because the tank's not getting attacked.
Yeah, the tank didn't pull anybody.
It was going to be Chad.
Yeah. So I'm hearing Chad tell this like this is wonderful story of something he's done. And what I'm hearing out of this is they were playing the game in the way that makes it fun for them and planning for their fun. And Chad has decided that his fun is more important than the fun of everyone else in the group.
What Chad is saying here is he is saying,
seeing as I've been a player in a games with you, seeing this kind of thing happen,
bickering and talking about
is not
what to
fun
do next.
For you.
Now, bickering and talking about what to do next is fine. These things need to be talked about and they need to be discussed and planned and then in a timely manner and moved on. But when you start talking about them and talking about them and talking about them and you're talking about them so much, you're saying the same words over and over and over and over again, then it stops being a discourse about what to do next or setting up for the next fight or having an intelligent discussion to people waving their they're saying, my fun is going left and your fun's going right, but my fun is more important than your fun, so we're going left. No, my fun is more important, so we're going right. Well, you know what? I made the fun decision for everyone.
Well, occasionally that's okay. When it happens constantly, that's when a problem happens.
When people beat the horse in analysis paralysis constantly, it's a problem there too.
Well, let's move this more explicitly to the tabletop.
Yes.
Knowing you guys in the subtext of this conversation, you guys already have, but let's make that explicit transition here for the sake of the audience. Moving this from something like World of Warcraft to the tabletop, as a game master, I have very mixed feelings on this because nothing is worse than either A, dead fish gamers. They just aren't doing anything. Mm-hmm. They're not contributing. You've set a scene. You've given them things to do, and they're just kind of sitting there staring at you. And sometimes even the best of players have days like this because they're distracted, they're tired.
And we're not talking like
whatever.
Doing interpersonal role play. It's like you set the scene, and there's the king, and the king is going to give you the quest to go kill the dragon, but you're not talking to the queen because you're role playing about all this different stuff and about your parents, about your past, and you're talking. That's cool. That is awesome. I have no problem with that. But the whole, the game master sets the scene, and there's king. Should we talk to the king? I don't know. I don't know. He might tell us to do something. I don't know. Should we talk to the king? Maybe we should talk
well,
to
that's
the
problem,
king.
Too.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about just standing there and staring
at
literally
like talking, I'm one person in the group that does
I'm staring
none
at
of the interactions.
A blank table.
Yeah.
And I eventually have to point at somebody and say, okay, the herald walks over to you just to get something occurring. Blow something up, to use your favorite phrase. That's problem one. Problem two is the analysis paralysis. Now, I think planning in an RPG is appropriate, especially
and
in certain kinds
too.
Of RPGs.
Yeah.
For example, if you take a game like Battletech, you have to work out a strategy. If you take a game like Shadowrun, if you've got a game master who's really running it in detail, where you learn things about, okay, what's the background of the guy we're going after? What are the weaknesses in their personality?
Well, with Shadowrun, you're essentially talking about a heist.
Yeah,
and if you don't plan a heist,
precisely,
that's A, it's going to go bad, and B, it's just not fun.
Yeah.
The whole point
so
of the
you,
heist.
So you do your detective work, you get your information together, you lay out the heist. Some planning has to occur. But even in those contexts, you can get this analysis paralysis. It just carries on and on and on and on, way beyond the point of productivity. And having somebody like Chad who finally says, screw it, I shoot the guard, this is where things get really confused in my mind, because on the one hand, as a game master, it's like letting out a fart. There's a certain amount of release, like, thank you, we are finally moving. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I have also watched other players at the table who felt very invested in that planning process get very frustrated because of the fact that they wanted a certain type of game or a certain type of, to use Wayne's word, fun. They had a certain approach to things, and they don't interpret the action of a proactive player. Mm-hmm. And I'm using Chad here, but I've had other proactive players.
Yeah, I've had proactive players. I mean, I've run a lot of games.
Right.
There's always at least one in every group.
When you're GMing, I tend to create one, so there'll be one in the group.
On one hand, you know, that's really good because it gets things moving, but I can see that frustration sometimes in the players because of the fact that they're like, well, wait a minute, that's really disrespectful. We're supposed to be a team here, out of character, if not in mm-hmm. character, likely both.
Yeah.
And you're just going rogue on us, and that's really disrespectful to our input, our ideas, our approach to this, which may be slower, more methodical. Mm-hmm.
I think the big difference is whether it's an occasional thing or a trend.
Yeah.
If it's happening every gaming session, you've probably got some underlying animosities going on in your group, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah.
If it happens every gaming session, someone is frustrated. Mm-hmm. It's either the person doing it is frustrated, the people that feel like, why am I even here? Because every decision I try to make is
probably
being undermined or frustrated, or more likely,
yeah.
like you said, Chad, mm-hmm. everyone is frustrated.
Yeah. And if
it happens once every six or game sessions or so, probably not that big of a deal.
And if you have the same person who's doing it all the time, you run into the problem of both creating and or enabling the dead fish gamers.
Yeah.
Because for every proactive, let's just get it done right now, I'm acting player, they're allowing three other people to sit there and do nothing all session, not contributing because active guy is doing everything.
Well, or Adam Gottfried, my co-host on Kick the Dice Bags, we talked about this on an episode of Kick the Dice. We took it from a different angle where we said, we are those players. We're owning it. We're those players. We know it. We're the proactive. I forget what we call ourselves. We're the proactive players.
Award-winning.
We're the award-winning proactive players. And
you called yourself alpha players.
Alpha players, yes. Alpha players, yes. That's exactly what we called ourselves.
I admitted to having listened to him on another podcast.
Alpha players. At least you don't have to work with me anymore. There was a point where Wayne and I figured out we were spending more time with each other than we were with our own wives. Because we gamed together, we podcasted together, and we worked together.
And then the sex really got in the way.
I know, right? You wanted to kiss on the mouth. Gross. So anyway, what we said is that, you know, you're not going to change. I am not going to stop being this proactive or alpha player. Adam is definitely not going to change being that. And you don't want him to, because then A, they're not having fun, but B, they're playing this sort of fake thing, right? And they're not very good at it either. We're not good at not doing stuff. But a proactive player needs to see that he can do good. He can move things along when things get slowed down, but he can also be an asshole. So a proactive player needs to realize this about himself. It's good to move the game.
Yeah.
It's not good to roll over other players. And I've done this. I have done this, and I am sorry for it. And it took a lot of people yelling at me to finally sink it through my thick skull of, oh, yes, I am doing this. I am in the wrong here. But
to an extent,
right. Yeah,
well, my whole point is it's a fine line.
Yeah.
As long as you're walking the line and balancing and keeping the other players in mind, yeah. you're doing a good thing for the game. When it's just about I'm bored and I'm pushing it forward, that's when it gets to be a problem.
Adam and I came up with some advice too for proactive players in that instead of pushing the game forwards, like, okay, everyone's just talking, nobody's doing anything, turn towards the person who's doing the least. And start role-playing with them. Start in character talking to them, asking them questions, not prodding them, not pushing them.
Right.
Say, you know, oh, hey, why don't you do this to push the game forward because everyone's pissed off at me, so I'm going to make you the bad guy to do my will. No, we're not saying that. Just start interacting with them. Start role-playing with them. You go over to the guard. It's like, okay, you come up with a plan, and then the plan is for the proactive guy. He's going to go and distract the guard. Maybe turn around to the inactive player and say, hey, I'm going to need Wayne, not that you're an inactive player, but or passive, but I'm going to need Wayne's character to come with me. Mm-hmm. Why? I don't know. I'll make that up when we get there. But I just want the passive player to come with me so we can get the scene going, because the active player can really help hopefully bring them out as long as they don't steamroller.
And really, I think if the active player is doing that, that solves like 90% of my problem with with their existence. If they are bringing out the folks who are not participating as much, and they are bringing the rest of the group up to the active level, then that's great. That's fantastic. Because then everyone's going to be playing at the same level of active, and everyone's fine.
Yeah, there is definitely a difference between focusing that proactivity on another player versus doing it toward the plot, because you're not going to agitate someone in all probability as much if you're involving them as opposed to working around them.
Because honestly, if there's analysis paralysis going on and you got a passive player, they're probably not taking part in that anyway. And really the problem for the active player, at least I've found in myself, is that there's nothing going on. I'm really bored. I want something to do. Or if Dan and Johan are role-playing, at least I can sit there and watch that.
Right.
And that's fun. But the meta... So, guys, our characters want to rob a bank. I don't know about robbing this bank, guys. Maybe we should rob the credit union. Credit union's not going to have enough stuff. You know, you've seen it on the sheet. It's the write-up, blah, blah, blah. And then it's just... And imagine that going on for an hour and a half, because I have been in that game.
And I think this comes down to... one, knowing yourself. If you can look in a mirror and say, yes, I am a passive player, or I am a proactive player, or I fit somewhere in between and this is where I fit, then you could probably head off some of your problems. You know, if you're passive, get a little more active. If you're proactive, then start paying attention to the people around the table. Watch their body language. Watch their facial expressions. See if they're starting to get agitated. If they are, back it off a bit. But I will say that there is a value to that that I've noticed as a game master, because sometimes it forces me to up my game a little bit. Not only is it oftentimes boring for me as a game master to listen to planning going on for an hour and a half, but once again, I guess I don't want to get too caught up on that, because it's not always analysis paralysis.
No, it isn't.
Sometimes it's just people are just really taking it slow. They're not really getting into it, and one person rushes ahead. Maybe the party is following.
I got in trouble for rushing behind. The entire party got captured. I just happened to be in a different area, and I was able to hide. So the entire party surrendered. They were outnumbered. They surrendered. They got captured. And then I rescued them. I got in trouble for not coming out and being captured with the rest of the party because we're a team. And I was like, but I saved you guys.
Have you read The Hobbit?
I thought I was... helping.
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, if I know I have an alpha player like that in a group, if I want to run a game that is going to be a more serious, slower paced game, so if I wanted to run that for our group, for example, I know I have to keep you in mind. I have to have something there that's going to keep you interested and active.
And it isn't going to be the combat.
Right. To avoid having you go up and punch something, because that's a very real possibility. So I have to, as a GM, like Dan said, I have to step up my game. I have to keep you interested and maybe even go so far as to say distracted at times.
Sure.
To let the other players do that slower paced game.
Let me give a different example here. One that did not involve analysis paralysis.
Or me?
No, this one did involve you. We were running an Epoch of Rhysos game. While I was running it, the group went to a space station. And I described the areas of the space station that were around you. Now, the average player, upon hearing that setting description, will find something in that setting to interact with. There were plot points that you guys were following, people that you were going to talk to, things you were going to look into, so on and so forth.
I went to look for a toy for my hidden pet.
Yes. The point being, though, that people kind of take what's in front of them and we're going with that. Chad, when I get to him, say, okay, what are you doing? He says, I want to find the most outrageous restaurant on this space station. And you basically went down there and created a scene.
Yes.
And now what this forced me to do, though, was I had not really thought through what the underbelly of this station is like. What
hey
is
man,
it?
A bunch of aliens. Aliens got to eat. That's got to be wild, right?
Precisely. And so I started having to think through, what does it look like in the divier parts of the station? What are the... in this case, because it was within human space, the underbelly of the station, while it did have some lower class humans, it also had a lot of aliens who were living as second class citizens. what are they doing down there? Mm-hmm. And as a game master, I had not thought through any of this. And when Chad brought that out there, it forced me to take a step up. But here's the thing about it. That didn't disrupt what anyone else was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, had I as a game master lingered on that and suddenly focused on that while everyone else is there twiddling their thumbs just because I thought Chad's idea was more interesting, now I've done a disservice to the rest of the party.
Another example from that same game that could have been a disservice to the party, not that particular session, but we were sneaking in to a school, to a college, and we're all in the room and we're doing our hacking thing, and Chad orders delivery tea. It's like, if I were running the game, there is a good chance security officers would have shown up at the door. There was a lot of moments like that where Chad's character would get bored, so he would go and do things like that. When the whole party's sneaking and one character sends out a secret order for tea, that has the potential to go wrong, depending on the GM.
I think something else you have to watch with proactive player is when they have kind of these random outbursts. For example, you walk into a tavern. One guy decides just to start a bar brawl just because. The plot's not moving slow.
You have
a direction to go.
That's bad.
It's not analysis paralysis. It's just this person wants...
Please tell me I've never done that. Or at least not done it in recent memory.
Certainly not done it to any degree that I can think of any anecdotes off the top of my head.
Because that's just jerky right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a fight. So that means that the dice are coming out and it's affecting people's character sheets. They're taking wounds. They're taking hits.
Well, and
bar brawl's fine. They didn't choose to get into it. Nobody had any say about it.
Now you have to figure out also what's the town guard going to do about this, and what does this do to the plot? And is the guy that was previously going to talk to you still willing to talk to you after this happened?
Everybody was in the mood, and the game master had set up for a RP session, perhaps, and now suddenly you're doing this big set piece combat because one guy's decided to be a jerk.
And see, this is also where I think the game master tact has to change up a little bit. When you have a quiet player, it is my experience that the best solutions are in character, in game. You have NPCs interact with them. You make plot points center around them. You look at their background and suddenly make pieces of that important to the plot. You pull them out in the game. But with the proactive player, sometimes they just need a spanking.
Are you coming around to my side of kill the player?
They went in, started a bar brawl. The town guard comes in and hauls them off.
Absolutely.
And they get to sit in the pokey for the next hour of game time.
Hey, can I escape yet? Can I escape yet?
No. Nope. And each time you ask me, I'm adding 5 minutes.
Exactly.
Sometimes you just got to smack them in the game. But I think more often than not, this situation, presuming you don't have someone who is just absolutely rowdy and out of control, is to talk to him out of game. Say, hey, look, you may not have noticed, but so-and-so and so-and-so were really getting frustrated. They really wanted to do things a certain way, and you kind of ran around them, and they felt kind of slighted by that. And I think you really have to approach this more at the out-of-character level between games, or if necessary, pause the game and say, hold on here, okay? Yes, the rest of the party may need to step things up a little bit and spend a little less time leaving you bored, but you've got to meet him halfway.
Absolutely.
You know, bring it down a notch. Let's go from an 11 to a 6 or a 7 here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, one thing to be aware of is that there's a very reasonable chance that if you have a player who is, you know, giving you those sorts of outbursts, it's because they don't like the game for some reason. It is not the game that they are sitting down to play. And I've run into this with players in games I've run on both ends of the spectrum, where I've had players upset because they sat down to play a high RP political manipulation game and they were horrified that we were spending so much time in map combat. And they just couldn't believe it and they were upset. And so every time they got the chance, they were chatting up the tavern keeper's wife and no one cared and everyone hated it and gave them evil looks for the 30 minutes that this conversation with a meaningless NPC would take. And then I've had the characters or the players who were there for the strategic map combat. That's what they sat down at the table for. The rest of it is just, you know, the backstory behind what's going on my map. I have this sheet full of numbers. I have these dice. I'm damn well going to use them. I haven't had a combat all night. I'm going to punch somebody.
Yeah, they wanted a dungeon crawl, and I was running Skies of Glass.
Right. You have to kind of realize that if you have those outbursts, there's probably a reason for it. Unless it's just a douchey player, in which case, yeah, Wayne's solution is probably the way to go.
Kill the player.
You know where I cannot get enough of these types of players, though?
Con games?
Con games, yes. Mm-hmm. One-shots and con games. Con games in particular, because probably the people don't know each other. It seriously looks like a junior high dance. Everybody's sitting up against the wall, all quiet and, you know, huddled down, waiting for somebody else to do something. And if you have one guy at the table who's not afraid just to be that jackass, then by golly, I want that person at the table because they will get things moving. And I don't have months and months and months of a campaign to draw somebody out of their shell. I've got 3.5 to 4 hours, maybe less if there was some kind of setup to this game, to get this story told. I need somebody to move.
Yeah. Chad, I love GMing one-shots at cons for Adam. Mm-hmm. He is one of my favorite players to have at the table because I know what I've got there, and now I can look at the other players and figure out what I have there. But it leads to one of my fears in the long term. Mm-hmm. Sarah, when she does a con game, is very much an alpha player like you or Adam. She is right in your face with the thing she wants to do. Well, I foresee a point in the future when she gets more comfortable with this group
that she turns
having two players like that sitting at the table across from each other.
And I agree with most of what Sarah says and does. So
yes, so
I'm right behind
if
her.
If I wanted to,
I don't think there's going to be conflict between her and I.
Exactly. So if I wanted to run a serious, tense, scary, any of those types of games, I would be very scared to do so with the two of you there, because one of you is going to go up and punch Cthulhu in the nose.
I do not. I'll talk to
him. I mean,
you
I would
punched a demon in the nose like 3 game sessions ago.
It's great.
Yeah, con games, you have to have somebody like that. One of the very first con games I ever played was actually at Fear the Con 2, I believe. Sat down at the table. I had one friend there that I knew who was at the table with me. Neither of us had been to a con before. Neither of us knew anyone else at the table. Most of the people at the table were just kind of, you know, sitting there quietly. Nothing was much was happening. It was a paranoia game. And
oh, you got to have proactive people.
You got
for
to.
That.
And so all of a sudden, you know, my friend had, you know, gone and gotten his bowl of gruel from the dispenser at breakfast. And Mikey looks over, says, "What color is the gruel?"
I was thinking that exact thing. He's not
DM says, it's green. Traitor! Shoots him in the chest. Dead. The look on my friend's face was priceless. As, you know, 5 minutes into the game, his first clone is dead.
Nice.
And from there on, it was a high energy kill fest for the rest of the slot.
Changing gears slightly on this too, another piece of advice for proactive players is get a hobby. And what I mean is get a hobby in the game. So your character needs to have something to do. Like maybe they run a business. Maybe they make something. Maybe they rebuild engines. Maybe they are into online dating. You know, anything.
Make toothpick models of the spaceship.
Make toothpick models of the spaceship. Like, that's what Wayne's character did. My character...
No, that was what your character did.
My character did that? I thought my character grew pot.
Well, the point being, though, you have something that you...
That wasn't your character.
Same character, two different campaigns.
Gotcha.
The point being, though, you've got this thing where you can go out there and do without derailing the game.
Right. And so the active player, it's like, while everybody's doing other stuff, because there's downtime, right? And what happens is the vast majority of people, I have seen in my experience, their characters don't have hobbies. So, especially in sci-fi games, where it's, okay, we go on this planet, and we have this adventure, and then we go and leave the planet, we get on our spaceship, and now it's 3 weeks out to the next planet and adventure. What are you guys doing in that time? And I've heard all kind of stuff. I'm practicing my quick draw, or I'm reading a book, or not much. Maintenance on the ship, sit-ups, whatever. 3 weeks! You know what you can do in 3 weeks? You can build a damn model of the ship out of toothpicks. That's what you can do in 3 weeks.
So
you could grow hydroponic pot in 3 weeks.
I have a piece of advice for the
future.
In the future.
I was going to say, no, you can't.
It was actually genetically engineered.
Space marijuana.
Space marijuana. It was like combined. Believe me, I had this whole thing planned out.
I have a piece of advice for a proactive player that I entirely give you credit for, Chad.
Oh.
This idea came from you.
I'm an award-winning person with good ideas.
That's right. One thing Chad occasionally will do in his proactiveness is instead of doing it out in character, he'll write it on a note card and slip it over to you. Occasionally, those become major plot points in the course of things that are happening because the other players don't realize that his character did it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. As an example, in a game a little while back, Chad's character arranged for a package of peyote to arrive for a former drug addict that was getting visions. Everyone else in the party is assuming that the bad guys have sent this package and it could be a bomb. So we then have a good 15-20 minute roleplay session around this package until they realize.
Well, I think the point here
is what Chad did.
Slipping a note is not socially disruptive.
Yes.
Well, the cool thing about slipping a note is that you could do something that's really freaking disruptive. That's totally not teamwork. It's totally going, you going rogue and off the rain. And you slip the note and it doesn't stop anybody from talking and planning and doing all this stuff. And the game master can look at that note and he can make a decision.
Right.
He could slip back. He could cross an X through it and write no and slip it back to you.
Yeah. Right. And then that action didn't disrupt the game. Yeah,
it didn't happen. And if you're an active player and you're listening to this and you're taking that advice and you get a note back that says no on it.
Don't throw a fit.
Don't bitch about it. There's things going on that you don't understand. There's things that you might have tunnel vision. You might not see the other players, not characters, the other players and what their mood is.
Well, and what's great about it is as a GM, let's say you do something like that. You slip it over and say, I'm going to punch this guy in the face. Mm-hmm. And I can write something down around the setting that you didn't realize, but your character would slide it back. We don't have to retcon that situation. It didn't just disrupt the game and roll it back. We continue going.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that as a GM when you do things like that. I love getting notes anyway from the players. But when you're going to do something big like that, I love getting it in note form. Mm-hmm. Because I can work it into the game then. And people don't even realize right away that it was something that you had done.
Yeah.
Like in that case,
I think
case,
of the peyote thing, it actually took a couple of sessions for the thing to show up.
It was good role play for a while that was just part of the game until people realized, oh, he did that.
Yeah.
I think like a lot of the topics we talk about on this show just comes back to really having a good social understanding of yourself and the people you're interacting with. But I think that's where we're going to wrap this one up.
I thought what we decided was it mostly comes back to marijuana and peyote.
Marijuana and murdering just liars.
I thought it would just decide if the alpha player crosses the line,
kill them.
You kill them and use the other alpha player.
Yeah. And then when you kill the alpha player, you can use their characters like a bad guy or something.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Chad, if I have two alpha players and I'm married to one, I'm sorry. It's going to be you.
I understand. Hey, she bakes cookies and cake. I can't compete with that.
But as for you guys who are not being threatened with murder by Wayne, thank you for tuning in.
He'll get around to you.
He'll get to you at Fear the Con 7.
Call the police.
And we will catch you next time. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.